Today are some issues in warp string phenomenology, and this is going to be a very biased advertisement of warp string phenomenology, and it's going to be biased towards some of the work that I've been doing recently in various aspects of string phenomenology. I hope to take you on a tour of some of these aspects and how they fit into the overall picture of string phenomenology. And for those of you who maybe are worried that this is going to be a string talk and, okay, quantum foundations, we don't understand any of it, there's going to be lots of pretty pictures, too. So just watch the pretty pictures go by. And at the end, actually, I expect that you'll learn something even from the pictures, even if you listen to nothing I say. So that'll be great. So why do we want to do string phenomenology? Well, one possible reason is that the LHC is turning on. And so we could see lots of interesting things at the LHC. We could see large X dimensions, TV scale strings, Randall Sunder models, Stringy Susie. Of course, we could see none of this, but we could see some of it. And one interesting question is, how do we distinguish these different types of scenarios from each other, in particular ones that are coming from string theory? So this is the question we might want to ask at the LHC. We also happen to live in an era of precision cosmological measurements. For the cosmic microwave background, we're getting very good data on that, and that the spectrum of cosmic microwave fluctuations is in good agreement with models of early universe inflation. This is nice, and this is interesting, because inflation suggests, as when we match to the data, that the energy scale of inflation may be close to the energy scale where stringy physics is important, like gut scale. Now, this is a model-dependent statement. You can, of course, bring the energy scale much down, much further down. But it's at least interesting to speculate on whether stringy physics can have any interesting impact on early universe physics when the universe was very hot. So this could be a laboratory in which to test stringy physics. So with these in mind, at least my biased view of string cosmology, or sorry, string phenomenology, is can we construct some models, hopefully explicit models, but models at any rate, of, say, cosmology and particle physics. In cosmology, we'll build models of inflation. And in particle physics, models like the Standard Model and supersymmetry. And can we then, and then the next question also is, can we even test these at the LHC or CMB? Can we rule out some of these models? I'm going to ask an even more specific question, which is, what can we learn about details of string compactification or details of geometry through these different string theory-based models from the LHC and from cosmology? So this is the question that I'm going to be interested in. And so the main point of my entire talk, so this is kind of the punchline, is that I'm going to look at a type of geometries for the extra dimensions called warp geometries. And in specific models, which I'll construct and I'll show you what they look like, subtle differences in the warp geometry can actually show up in observations of cosmology and of particle physics. And this is really interesting and really nice, because it might be a way of at least seeing how to make some connection with this warp geometry, which we wouldn't expect to measure in the first place. At the end, this is probably the backwards way to go. I'm going to ask whether I even know what I'm doing with warped geometry and warped effective theory. There's some issues here. Which, if we want to go further in understanding phenomenology, we need to address. And so I'll give you just a brief preview of some of the issues that I'm looking at here. So first, let me tell you what I mean by what a warp throat is, so you understand the language. So warp throat, I'm going to take, so my metric will be four-dimensional space, and then I'm going to have some factor out front of the four-dimensional space, this function f of r, which I'm not going to specify too detailed. I'm going to consider different functions f of r. This is the factor called the warp factor. And then the extra dimensions here will have some radial coordinate. This r radial direction will be a distance from what I'm calling the tip of the throat, where this tip of the throat is just defined by when this function f to the minus 1/4 is actually very small. And then there's usually some extra five-dimensional space, some angular directions, for the throat, and we're not going to talk too much about the details of that, but they're there. And so two examples of warp throats that I've drawn here, the typical one from five-dimensional physics, the Randall-Sundrum model. So it has this warped extra-dimensional geometry. So this is the fifth-dimensional space, the radial coordinate. And then what I'm envisioning in a 10-dimensional framework is something like the above, where it does essentially the same thing. The extra dimensional geometry is warped. So I said that these warp throats generate a hierarchy. Actually, we heard a little bit about that on Monday. Brian's talk was talking about how we can use hierarchies or warp throats to generate hierarchies. And in fact, one possible thing is we could use multiple warp throats to generate multiple hierarchies. I'm just bringing this up because this is kind of puts things in a more global picture of why we might want to do these. So we might have two throats, and so they're connected by the rest of the compact space, some Calabi-Yau space, something like this. And one throat might be where inflation happens, and so the size of this throat, so it's kind of short, sets the scale of inflation around the gut scale, and then the size of the other throat sets the scale of physics at the standard model. I put standard model in quotes because we don't know how to realize it there, but we can talk a little bit more about that in a bit. These modular throats, of course, have some issues in doing this model building. And in fact, this is one of the issues that I'm interested in trying to understand how to do this better and how to come to a more complete understanding. Yeah, so as I've shown here, the size, in all the pictorial representations, the size is going to set the length of the throat, the hierarchy. And yes, where this tip is, how far away this tip is going to set the hierarchy.
What about like curvature? How strongly the space is curved? I mean, is it related to the length?
Well, what's really going to set the hierarchy is this factor h, which in the previous is this factor here. And this does have something to do with the curvature, the overall curvature scale. And so, indeed, there's some relation between the overall curvature scale and the length of the throat. Yes. So we like these warp throats. They're fun to work with because they give us lots of interesting things. As I said, one thing we could use them for is to solve hierarchies. We could also maybe use them for low-energy Suzy breaking. There's some interest in this direction now. One nice thing about them from a theoretical construct, or from a theoretical direction, is that they're local. And so we can actually get an explicit model, or explicit metric, and really do physics with it. As I'll explain in a little bit, they're good for inflation. There's interesting things to do with tunneling, which may be interesting for Suzy breaking mediation to the standard model. They're really interesting from the point of view of gauge gravity duality, which we'll hear more about that in the rest of the week for some ADS-CFT talks. And they're important for getting stability of complex superstrings, which I won't talk about at all. So a couple more things about building these warp spaces in string theory. So the archetypal example in five dimensions is going to be this Randall-Sundrum. And the geometry will be anti-de-Sitter 5 space. So it's going to have this warp geometry. And it's going to be explicitly cut off at the ends of this space. So can I get this in string theory?
Well, I can get anti-de-Sitter space fairly generically in string theory. Just take a stack of D-brains. I get a space ADS5 cross some extra angular direction X5. The problem is I don't get a cutoff. And so I don't get a finite length through the throat. It just keeps going. So this doesn't give me hierarchies. I can fix this also in a fairly generic way if I turn on generalizations of electromagnetic fields in the extra dimensions, which is necessary in order to stabilize the size or the shape of the extra dimensions. Then I can smooth out the tip, and I get a nice smooth cutoff in the tip. And at some point, it looks approximately anti-de-Sitter space. And then near the tip, it deviates from this. And so these will be, so the archetypal example is Klebanoff-Strassler. For the 10-dimensionals. And they look like Randall-Sundrum, but aren't quite like Randall-Sundrum. They deviate just a little bit. I'll show you how they deviate in just a second. Yeah?
That throat is also not finite, right?
The Klebanoff-Strassler? So the Klebanoff-Strassler is not because it doesn't have a UV cutoff.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm imagining that I'm also going to compactify and glue it onto some compact Klebanoff. But since I don't have a description of that, I'm just going to I essentially assume that it's there and I have a UV cutoff. Some kind of shape. So I can play lots of games and get lots of different warp geometries. There's classes called resolved warp deformed conopodes. I can make cones over different angular spaces. They all have different isometries, and they all have slightly different infrared behaviors. So a comparison of the warp spaces I'll be considering. The Randall Centrum scenario, shown in the dashed line here, is the warp factor goes like 1 over little r to the 4. This big R was the curvature that you were mentioning earlier, Brian. And it gets explicitly cut off at some distance r. The blue line is the Kalman-Strassler warp factor. And you can see at far distances, at large r, it looks exactly like the Randall Centrum model. It looks like a minus 5. But then when you get close to the tip, it smooths out nice and regular. So you don't have to cut it off. And instead, it smooths out and flattens out the warp factor. So this is nice. I can also consider a general class. As I said, there's all these different other types of warp factors. I'm going to call parameterize a general class of warp geometries by this mass gap ansatz. This isn't actually a solution. It's just a phenomenological kind of fit. And I'm going to have a parameter that I can tune. And as I tune this parameter, I only make small modifications near the tip. So everything else, it looks exactly like the Kalman-Strassler, or rather like the Randall Centrum scenario. I just get small modifications near the tip as I tune this parameter very slightly. This actually is based on some exact solutions that I was mentioning before, these resolved warp form conical solutions. There's a tunable parameter that you can tune, and you can get different geometries in the infrared of these warp zones. So that's what I had in mind when I was considering these mass gap geometries. I want to return just briefly to the standard model, just in case you're curious of what I'm thinking about this or how I'm going to realize this. One possible way, so the Randall Centrum scenario, when it first proposed, put the standard model all the way at the tip. And the string theory version of that, what I'd like to do is say a stack of D-brains at the tip, or a stack of D-brains at singularities at the tip, various things like this. That's what I'd like to envision. Phenomenology has progressed a lot in the last couple of years. What phenomenologists now do is put the standard model in the bulk. So put fermions in the bulk and localize them at different points in the warp geometry. The analog of this in the string theory would be put some D7 brain in the throat and localize fields in the D7 brain. This is actually a current active area of research at Madison that we're looking into. I don't have anything interesting to say about that. But this is the direction that we'd like to go to realize the standard model. So now let me get to the meat of what I want to talk about, which is how these warp geometries can actually affect cosmology and the CMB. Brief primer on inflation, though we had a nice one this morning. So inflation is this rapid expansion of the size of the early universe. And we just needed to solve some long-standing problems like horizon problems, flattened problems, things like this. This can be done, so this is the region, this can be done with a scalar field on a very flat region of the potential. So on this region, it's flat, and then we say it's slowly rolling on this potential if it moves slowly. And the quantum fluctuations of the field seed the density perturbations that we see in our later universe. So what about string theory and inflation? Well, there's lots of natural questions we could ask about how string theory and what it has to add to this picture. In particular, what is this extra scalar field, this phi field? What is the potential that we get for this field from inflation? Are there any interesting signatures of stringy inflation? And how do we reheat reheat after inflation in these string theory models? So I'll address each of these in turn, and I'll tell you how warp geometry affects these. And it turns out warp geometry is crucial for many of these in understanding how we get inflation from string theory. So first, what is the inflaton and what is the potential? Well, one way to get a scalar potential is to take a D-brain and an anti-D-brain and separate them by some distance. The distance between them is a scalar field, given by a scalar field, and they'll attract each other and eventually annihilate in this artist's rendition of what actually happens. And so the collision and annihilation will reheat the universe. But before they collide and annihilate, the scalar field perhaps could be used as an inflaton field. So does this work? What's the potential for the scalar field? Well, in flat space, the Coulomb potential between the brains and the anti-brains is too steep. You won't get enough inflation. So we have to do something different. And actually, warp geometry helps a lot here. So if you place the brain and the anti-brain in a warp throat, so here the red is the anti-brain, the blue is the brain, and it's moving towards the anti-brain, the potential, the Coulomb potential, actually flattens out real nicely. And so you get a nice flat potential. And this goes by the name of the KKLMMT, by the names of the authors, which I won't repeat unless you really want me to. OK, so that's great. Everything's nice and hunky-dory, except it's not completely. There's extra corrections to the potential, which mess up this flatness. They come from various sectors. The main thing that we're learning, however, is that it depends on details of how you stabilize the internal geometry, these types of questions. At the end of the day, the potential for inflation and the trajectory that the brains take are really sensitive to details of the geometry and details of how you stabilize things. So we don't have a very complete picture on that, though we're getting much closer to an explicit model of these D-brain inflation models. So, there's lots of things, lots of interesting things going on in the potential on how geometry affects the potential. I want to briefly mention some work about how we reheat, because it's also very nice and pictorial. So this brain, the anti-brain, will annihilate in the warp throat. So they annihilate. After the annihilation, what's left over is just a bunch of highly excited massive closed string states that are just sitting at the tip of the throat. We want to reheat the standard model somehow. And we can do this by noting that these closed strings will decay extremely quickly down to the lowest level string state, the graviton, and the KK modes of the graviton. And then the energy in those states will tunnel from one throat to the standard model throat in this particular picture, and then hopefully excite the standard model however we're realizing it. So this is the kind of cartoonish picture of one reheating scenario with warp brain inflation. The tunneling process, it turns out, will be highly sensitive to the details of the geometry. I just want to kind of sketch it here. It turns out the KK modes are the ones that you're really going to be interested in. And they'll be localized. Their wave functions are localized at the tip. And they'll quantum mechanically tunnel through from one throat to the other through the bulk. Turns out they don't want to. They can't just migrate. They have to quantum mechanically tunnel. So this tunneling process will take a long time. And it's important for understanding reheating how long this process actually takes. And that answer to that question depends on geometry. If you have a Randall syndrome throat, you'll have a particular tunneling rate, and therefore a particular reheating temperature at the end of inflation. If you have a Klebanov-Strassler throat, then you get a different type of tunneling rate where the details depend on lots of other details of the geometry. But schematically, it's going to be more suppressed than the Randall syndrome throat. So the tunneling rate and, by extension, the reheating temperature will end up depending on warp geometry. And actually, I was just realizing when talking with Tom earlier that this reheating process could also give interesting signatures in gravitational waves. As the D-brains annihilate and give off gravitational waves, then one can try and view this as some kind of preheating from a field theory inflation model. So there may be some interesting gravitational wave signature as well. But this I haven't thought about in detail. Let me finally mention that there are some interesting signatures in some particular models. So one particular model of D-brain inflation, which is kind of subsumed in the D-brain inflation model that I discussed before, is something called DBI inflation. The name DBI comes from Dirac-Born-Enfeld, which is just the action, or the name given to the action which describes the motion of the D-brain. Remember, this phi was just the separation between the brains. And so this action for that scalar field describes how the separation between the brains evolves with time. Interestingly enough, this action imposes a speed limit on how fast the brains can move towards each other. And the speed limit depends on this warp factor, f of phi. You can even define some relativistic gamma factor, which is related to the speed limit. This is interesting and helpful for inflation because you can take a steep potential on which the inflaton field would normally roll down extremely fast, and you wouldn't be able to get inflation. However, because of the speed limit, it can't roll down very fast. It's stuck on the steep part. It can only go a certain speed. And so it can even slowly roll for a slow potential. Yeah. Go ahead.
Physically, what is creating this speed limit?
Yeah. It's really just an artifact of geometry. You can view it in terms of some dual field theory as strings stretching from the brains to the horizon, which then suppress various things like the motion of the string or the motion of the brain. But it's really just kind of an artifact of the geometry. So I'm not going to go into a lot of the interesting model building that's been done with this. So this is a very interesting scenario. It can give lots of interesting signatures, lots of things people can play with. But what I just want to point out is that some basic inflationary observables can actually depend on the details of the warp geometry. And it happens as follows. So there's a particular inflationary observable called spectral index, which is roughly just whether the perturbations on large scales are of larger amplitude or smaller amplitude than the perturbations on small scales. So that's what this quantity is, this NS minus 1. It measures whether the perturbations on large scales or small scales are different, have different amplitudes. For the CDI model, I can calculate it. And it depends on this gamma factor, which then depends on the warp factor, this F of 5. So the spectral index will depend on the geometry. So we can ask, can I actually see it in the CMB? Well, I've shown here plots of the spectral index for different geometries. And so what I'm scaling, showing here, here's the spectral index, the absolute value of NS minus 1. Here I'm changing the hierarchy or the scale of inflation. And so I've shown the Randall-Sundrum throw, this other mass gap geometry, and then the KS geometry. And you get differences of order 1%. Between these different geometries. A more physical question or more physical observable may be this one where I'm looking at number of E folds back from inflation. 60 E folds is about here. And so if you trace up 60 E folds, you can see that there's differences between the Randall-Sundrum and the KS. And you can't see them here, but there's small differences between the KS and the mass gap geometries as well.
Formulas that you wrote, it's in the limit when gamma is large.
These formulas, no, actually. So these formulas are actually more generic. But in the limit when gamma is small, then the warp factor geometry, or then the warp factor up there drops out of everything, and it becomes a normal slow roll expression for the spectral index.
For small gamma, not for. I thought that gamma should be large in order for you to for a DBI.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But. So this is actually a generic expression for the DBI model I have in mind. Gamma is going to be large.
So, and that's an exact computation, no matter what how big gamma is. So there was an
estimate. That's right. So it's exact to leading order in some small parameter, which is the generalization in the slow roll parameter, which will then be small either for large gamma or small gamma, however you want to do it. As long as you have inflation, this is
exact. And in that. On the right plot, when you say exact KS, what you mean just the one of Strauss?
That's exactly what I mean. So the reason I put exact there was I wanted to emphasize that I wasn't approximating the KS geometry with some mass gap formula. So that's what I mean by exact.
Right. So what's inflating? If I put a D3 brain in the geometry, there is no potential for it?
So if I put a D3 brain and an anti-D3 brain,
just so he's okay, so you're assuming that you also put them in the D3 brain.
I am. And then there's, and so I've also not told you precisely what the potential is, because as I noted earlier, there's some complicated details going into exactly what the potential is.
But you said exact KS, I know what KS is.
Ah, so the extra effects that I can put in, such as moduli stabilization, will change the potential.
So what you mean by that is not really a local warped conical solution, but what you mean an effect of an analogical five-dimensional model.
I would say that I'm making some assumptions about the inflationary potential, but aside from that, I'm using the column of stress like geometry. Maybe we can talk later.
Why there is a change of regime for Randall's syndrome? There is a break on the left. There's a change in slope on the right.
Yeah, so the break here is actually the spectral index for Randall syndrome in these DBI models goes from NS minus 1 is negative, which is where it is here, to positive. And so that's what this cusp is. Because I'm showing it absolute value on a log plot, it looks rather strange, like a discontinuous cusp.
So there's a special point
here. There is. There's actually a special point in the Randall syndrome where the spectral index is 0. Any other questions?
So I can also consider other inflationary observables, like the running of the spectral index, and I get differences as well in the observables between the KS and the Randall syndrome models. So now I want to change gears slightly and talk about warped throats and the LHC. What I have in mind here, and the thing I'm going to be looking for, are KK gravitons. Let me briefly explain what I mean by these KK gravitons. So I'm going to take the four-dimensional graviton in when I have extra dimensions. And so I have, for the metric, the 4D metric, I have flat space plus perturbation, which could depend on the extra dimensions. And I'm going to do a Kluze Klein expansion. So I have some zero mode, which doesn't depend on the internal directions, and some higher modes, which may depend on the internal directions. I'm just going to require that this satisfies the 10-dimensional Laplace equation, so it has a 4D part and a 6D part. And so the normal graviton that we know of, the massless graviton, is this 0 mode. It satisfies just delta 4, or box 4, H is equal to 0. And then these other KK modes, because they have non-trivial dependence on the extra dimensions, will have some non-zero component on the right-hand side of this equation solving for box 4. And so these are massive gravitons. So this is what I mean by KK gravitons, just massive versions of the KK or of the normal massless graviton. So if I solve for these wave functions in these warped spaces, I find that the wave functions are peaked at the tips of these throats. So here I've shown, once again, comparison between the standard anti-de Sitter or the Randall syndrome models, what I mean here in the black dashed and the Klebanov-Strassler. You see they're both peaked in the tip of the throat. The zero mode, however, is flat across the extra dimensions because we said it can't have extra dimensional dependence. So these wave functions are peaked at the tip, but that's precisely where the difference in all these geometries is going to show up. So then if we try and resolve or solve for the KK spectrum, the KK mass spectrum and the wave function spectrum for all these different geometries, we should see differences. And these differences, in fact, might be large because the KK masses or the KK wave functions are highly sensitive to details of the warp geometry. So that's indeed what we find. So on the left figure here, I've shown the mass spectrum for the Randall syndrome scenario. That's a very characteristic spacing between the KK modes. In the Klebanov-Strassler solution, you solve for the KK modes, just the radial directions, and you get a different spectrum. And you get a different spacing between the masses. And then these other mass gap geometries have even smaller spacings and different spacings. Yeah, Brian.
What's the dependency on the excitation number n? I mean, is there, so that in ADS it goes like n squared roughly?
Uh-huh. I believe it goes the same. It goes like n squared plus something.
Okay, so just the overall spacing is different, though.
Yeah, the overall spacing.
And then on the previous slide, so in these Klebanov-Strassler models, it looks like the graviton then is the zero mode graviton is localized on the infrared side.
So the coordinates that I've chosen here, so these are non-standard coordinates in the normal Randall syndrome scenario, or Randall syndrome coordinates that people choose. In the coordinates that I've chosen, the zero mode graviton is flat across all the extra-dimensional space.
So no matter what. So these are the KK mode. These other.
Yeah, exactly. So what I've shown here is the first excited state, the first KK mode, and that's localized in the infrared.
Again, in KS, I don't think you can localize. If I take real KS, mm-hmm. You cannot localize any states there at the tip. Right, the wave function will spill to infinity.
It'll spill to the UV.
So you make some assumption of how you introduce the cutoff.
I have in mind some cutoff, yeah.
Okay, and so presumably you have checked that whatever cutoff you made, your conclusions are robust.
That's right. That's right. Because it dies off so much at large R, that any changes in that cutoff are the details are sensitive to that. That's right.
Do you have to assume a value for the string coupling? Then you might be able to present it?
Yes, but it's just kind of a parameter that shows up in the geometry.
Can't you stabilize it some value?
I'm certainly assuming it to be stabilized. And if I'm not stress free solution, we hope that it's stabilized and it's the same all throughout the geometry. In fact, that's what the solution says. But then once again, you recut off.
Yeah, in the local model, it's a model.
Exactly. This is just a local model. So once you cut off or once you introduce the compact part of the space, then you have to worry about that. But in the throat, it's just parameter. Okay, so the spectrum is different.
Turns out the coupling, which is just the wave function, is different. Here I'm just kind of operationally assuming that the standard model is realized at the tip of the throat. And so then the coupling is just the wave function overlap at the tip, or the wave function squared at the tip. For Randall's syndrome, the coupling is flat for all KK modes. All KK modes have the same coupling to the standard model at the tip. For the Klebanov-Strassburg solution, the coupling actually increases with KK mode. That's kind of interesting, because it will give us interesting observations when we try and look for these things. So I want to then make the statement that this isn't purely academic, that perhaps we could see something like this at the LHC, given the fact that I've given lots of operational assumptions on what the standard model is going to look like, and I don't know how to realize it. Certainly, we don't know the details of the signatures, but some generic signatures could follow just by looking at KK phenomenology. There's been lots of work on this. Yeah?
Can you say again, what couplings are you talking about?
This is essentially just the wave function squared at the tip. And so the wave function squared at the tip for the Randall syndrome scenarios are the same.
But from the particle perspective, couplings to.
Yeah, so
I mean, do you study like interactions of KK modes in warp geometry? And if I write down an effective field theory, reduce that to 4 dimensions, that's interpreted as a couple.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So I'll have in mind then the standard model at the tip on some brain. Mm-hmm. And then when I reduce to 4 dimensions and study what the KK phenomenology will be, or what the KK interactions with the standard model will be. This is just the coupling of the gravitons to the standard entry momentum.
So this is more like an overlap of the wave function.
That's exactly what it is.
How big it is.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, yes.
So what's the redshift or the warp factor at your standard model? I mean, are you doing the, I mean, are you using warping to generate the hierarchy?
Yes. Yes. I'm assuming it's, say, the Randall-Sundrum hierarchies. So the exponential factor is like 10 to the 15, 10 to the minus 15, 10 to the minus 16. So that the local scale at the tip of the throat is at a TUV.
Does that determine where you put your UV cutoff from? Or does it matter? Because it would, that basically determines the radius.
So that will depend on what UV scale I have in mind.
Can I ask a nice question? When you say the wave function localizes at the tip, the throat, the volume of the throat is typically much smaller than the volume of the entire compact manifold.
That's right.
And when I talk about wave function square, I'm integrating over the volume of the compact manifold.
That's right.
So why does warping, I mean, why don't I see this effect that, you know, since the volume of the throat is much smaller, and then when I multiply it by the volume of the entire manifold,
So you're saying that if I take into account the volume of the entire manifold, then the KK mode actually may be in the localized in the bulk. So the earlier wave function that I showed here, well, even though this is in the throat, if I have zero warp factor in the bulk, if I just really naively model this flat space, which of course we don't know that that's really a good approximation, then the wave function will still be flat and very small in the bulk. And so the most of the wave function for the KK mode will be in the tip of the throat. Does that answer your question?
after multiplying by the volume factor, you're saying that it's not going to play much of a role.
You're worried about when I normalize.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Yes, so if you have some outrageously huge volume, then even though you have some small wave function involved, then this can happen. In setting the overall normalization.
Right.
But that will just set the overall normalization.
So in these models with several throats, even though you're creating coherence, there is no way of stabilizing that coherence. We don't know of any good model for that. Is that correct?
For creating multiple throats?
When you study couplings between collisive line modes and sort of the overlap between an inflationary throat and the standard model throat, you don't have a model.
Right.
But you have some model in mind.
So one can, of course, take some very simplistic models of gluing two ADS throats together. That's probably too simplistic of a view. So there's been recent work in this direction.
But do people understand how to stabilize throats, how to make throats of different size?
So actually, there's this paper by Hemecker, The Ubiquitous Throat, which argued that, indeed, it seems like we should be able to get a large sets of different throats with different hierarchies. And so only up to something way beyond what we would need to stabilize the hierarchy does it seem unreasonable to get these throats. Okay, so kind of running out of time. I just want to show you that
we can do a little bit of phenomenology, look at production through quarks and gluons, and say look at decays into lepton pairs. And we're essentially going to rerun what the Randall syndrome phenomenology people are doing, except with the new inputs for the KK masses and the KK couplings that we get from these types of geometries. And what you see then is very interesting differences between the Randall syndrome and the Klebanoff-Strassler geometries. So here's the first peak, and you can indeed see that the resonances are more closely spaced, and the fact that the couplings are different lead to broader resonances, and in effect we lose the third one for the Klebanoff-Strassler, although we really don't expect to see anything beyond the second one anyway. So you see more closely spaced resonances, and you see a higher overall scale of the cross-section, and the resonances themselves are broader. And so measuring the spacing between these resonances, let me say that measuring one resonance would be great. That would be exciting by itself. Let's say we measure two, and we think they're coming from some Randall syndrome or warp geometry, then you can try and figure out what type of warp geometry that might be from. Although that's certainly a hard problem to reverse engineer.
Mass gap phenomenological morphologies plot as well.
We did do mass gap calculations. We didn't put it on this plot because it was more clear just to show the difference between the stress and Randall syndrome.
In principle, I should be able by tuning numbers in your mass gap model to get exactly the bond of stress.
That's right.
Maybe for some.
That's right. That's right. And we played this game, in fact. And so there are some values of this mass gap parameter.
So I'm not sure how to interpret what you're saying. There is a huge degeneracy in the class of models, so I don't see how looking on things like that we'll be able to actually pinpoint.
There is indeed degeneracy. So what I mean by seeing something about warp throats is you could at least tell the difference between Randall syndrome, say, and some other geometry. And you could phenomenologically model that by some mass gap. And so that, I think, is the best you can do.
So what's the behavior of cross-section with energy as a product of large
energy? So this will continue along this line. You worry about something like an inequality.
Yeah, but I'm just curious, what's the behavior with energy?
I don't recall right off the top of my head, but bad things will happen once you get enough KK bucks in. I mean, so the cross section will be high, very high. It won't drop off as quick as you might like it to. The background in this plot is like down here, and it falls off like something like this. So these are very much above background. You can also do this for top pairs, and you see the same conclusions, but I won't go into that or why we might say that. Just one quick word about warp effect field theory, and then I'll conclude. So it's important to understand if we even know what we're doing in these constructions, if we understand the dynamics of these throats. essentially, I just want to say that when we compactify to four dimensions, we have to understand the moduli, so we have to understand the four-dimensional fields which describe this compactification. When we have the unwarped case, this is somewhat well understood. When we have the warped case, there are a number of problems. And the number of problems make solving the problem very difficult. In particular, you have to introduce fields from compensators, you have to consider back reaction, and you also have to consider mixing with KK modes. And you have to solve an equation, or a set of equations that look like this. And this is very difficult. And this is just the gravity, so you have to include the full 10-dimensional supergravity equations. So
this is hard, but if you make some nice gauge choices, you can make some massive simplifications. And so this is what we're doing to try and understand what's going on here. If you're interested in discussing this, we can talk later. So there's lots of interesting applications, but just to conclude, so what I'd like to say that we're doing is to, so at the LHC, we can make lots of measurements at low energies, lower energies than perhaps we would expect string theory to be interesting or important. In cosmology, we can hopefully make measurements of higher energy, but they're less controlled. We can only do the measurements once. We only have one universe. And hopefully by combining these and combining different models in these two different areas, we can learn something about structure of geometry, or more generally, about the structure of string theory. That's all. Thank you.
Comments?
Everybody's hungry.
Yeah, let's thank the speaker again.